history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around you. They're not hiding, but often their incredible stories remain hidden for decades or even forever. And we know there's power in the perspective we derive from taking a little time to listen. So we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so the rest of us never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And we end up not only learning a lot, it's not just educational, it can be pretty entertaining and eye-opening. And often it's inspirational to understand what they went through and how they faced it. We end up seeing more clearly why that label of the greatest generation has endured. Every once in a while, we meet a veteran who is also a centenarian. And we all know intuitively that it's pretty rare to live to 100 or beyond. And I don't know about you, but I was kind of curious what percentage of the population actually makes it to that century mark. Think about that for a second. What would you guess? 1 out of 100? 1 out of 1,000? Nope, not even close to that many. Roughly 2 out of every 10,000 Americans makes it to 100. And 80% of those who do are female, so it's extremely unique to find an American man who reaches that milestone, but you're going to hear the story of one of them today. And before we get to that, there are a couple of others on my mind. Two other centenarians who are absolute American treasures passed away in this past week. And if you're hearing their names for the first time today, I hope you'll take a little time online and do a little research, learn about them. I have some links up for you at hometownheroesradio.com. In Colorado Springs on Tuesday, Jim Downing finished his race at the age of 104. Jim was one of the most spirited Pearl Harbor survivors you could ever meet. I recently read his book, The Other Side of Infamy, and I'd recommend that to anybody. It's linked for you online. In Colorado Springs, they even have a bridge over Interstate 25 named after him. Jim Downing will never be forgotten, and neither will Julio Barella. The ranks of Pearl Harbor survivors are dwindling, but we are left now with an even smaller number of survivors of the infamous Bataan Death March. If you ever find yourself in Las Cruces, New Mexico, you have to visit the Bataan Death March Memorial there, complete with footprints cast from actual survivors trailing a statue of two men helping another along that trail of misery. This coming Monday in Las Cruces, they'll be gathering to remember Julio Barella, who died last Monday at the age of 101 at the New Mexico Veterans Home in Truth or Consequences, the same place where I had the privilege of interviewing him 8 years ago. If you'd like to hear Mr. Barella's incredible story of survival, pull up episode number 114 at hometownheroesradio.com. Jim Downing and Julio Barella, two centenarians who inspired more people than they'd ever know. But today, we're going to look ahead to the 100th birthday of Robert Thacker, who's also been in the news lately. He turns 100 this coming Wednesday, February 21st. And you can't make it to that number without being resilient. But here's a taste of just how resilient he is. 2 months ago, on December 17th, Colonel Thacker was walking across a crosswalk near his home in San Clemente, California, when he was struck by an SUV. He ended up in the hospital with a broken foot, lacerations on both sides of his body, a laceration to the side of his head, and even slight bleeding on the brain. After all that, you might not expect your average 99-year-old to still be breathing 2 months later. But average has never been a word that applies to Robert Thacker. When I caught up to him on the phone this week, he said he wasn't feeling great, and he wasn't the same guy, but I sure heard the same vigor in his voice, the same humor, the same wit, and I'm going to let you hear for yourself, starting with the explanation. What's his secret to reaching the century mark? After all his close calls during World War II, including flying into Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, his work as a test pilot, and even this most recent odds-beating episode getting literally run over on the street. So as that commercial used to say, Colonel Thacker, how is it that you keep taking a licking but keep on ticking?
Well, number one, Paul, it's modern medicine that's making all of this possible. And good luck, not bad luck. Ever since my yo-yo champion of Southern California in 1932, I've been a lucky guy. I'm proud of a couple of things. Number one, I'm proud of my family. I'm proud of my good luck. And I got in on day one when the shooting started at Pearl Harbor. I lucked through that. I flew a complete tour in the Japanese area, and then I turned around and went to Europe, where the big war was really on, and I flew a complete tour against the German Empire. And the missions were, when I started flying in Europe, was about 20 missions, and you were either dead or shot down in B-17s. And I flew 33 missions. I led 33 missions and survived a return to the States. Now, I'm the only one that I can think of. I'm not saying I am now. I'm saying that I am aware of. There may flew in both theaters, but there's very few completed a complete tour in both theaters. So, Paul, that's the whole thing. But you know what people are interested in. When they meet me, they say, Colonel, are you the guy that won the Southern California Yo-Yo Champion in 1932? They're not interested in my missions or what happened. They want to pull my leg. They say, are you still active? And I say, no, I'm almost 100. So, Paul, that's it. I had a great time. I'm having a great time. And thank you for your interest.
I've got to follow up with a question on the Yo-Yo Championship of 1932. What was your winning trick? What'd you make the yo-yo do?
Do you know I got a $20 gold piece, a $10 gold piece, and a $5 gold piece as first prize? If I would have kept those instead of putting them in the bank, it would be worth $1,300 today. So you got to watch this spending program that we're not paying for today, gentlemen. That's all I have to say about the situation at the present time. However, Trump is our president, and we've got to support him. He's the only president we have.
I'm wondering what you're going to do to celebrate the century mark.
Well, I'm having about 120 people to come to my home. And I want these people to see my house. I want them to see my models and the model aircraft shop that I have in my garage. And I want it to be a home exercise. Well, my birthday, which is February 21st, 2018. Mm-hmm. So my soup is getting cold. So this is all of my talk that I'm going to give today.
Fair enough. Well, happy birthday, sir. I hope you have a special time, and I hope you're out there flying your model airplanes again soon.
I haven't flown for over half a year. No, Paul, I have to stabilize myself with a walker.
Yeah.
I have to have someone with me 24 hours a day. So I'm sort of in jail.
Man, that stinks.
It certainly does. But, you know, you can't turn back time and things that have happened. You just got to expect them as they come every hour.
Well, that's good advice for all of us, no matter where we are in life. And I'm sorry to make you reheat your soup there, but we'll look forward to some photos from that 100th birthday celebration. And we're going to celebrate Robert Thacker now by listening to the story he told us 5 years ago when he was just a tender 95-year-old. And as we cue that up, please keep Colonel Thacker in your prayers. He's not used to being confined to his home. You can hear how sharp he still is mentally. And knowing his story, I would not be surprised at all to see him back out there competing in radio-controlled airplane competitions as a centenarian. But we're going to go back now to his childhood, growing up in El Centro, California. And like every pilot, there was a moment where he caught the flying bug. For Robert Thacker, it happened when he was 9 years old.
There was a gentleman by the name of Lindbergh, and he was the first person out of many, many, many that made it from New York to Paris nonstop in the Spirit of St. Louis. And I'm only about 120 miles from San Diego, where the Spirit of St. Louis was made and constructed by Ryan Aircraft Company. and I was bitten. I said, that's what I'm going to do when I'm a little older. And that was in 1927, and Lindbergh was a true genius.
So just reading about it in the newspaper and hearing about him, you said, that's something that I want to do?
Yes, absolutely. I followed that along as quickly as I could. Went through El Centro High, El Centro Junior College, graduated from El Centro JC in 1937. Actually, all of a sudden, I kind of ran out of money and brains at the same time. So I thought I would enlist in the Air Force, in the Air Corps in those days. And I took my physical in 1937. There were 10 of us at March. There were 2 of us passed. One of them didn't look like an officer, so they failed him. And I was 1 out of 10 that started out passing the physical. Can you imagine such idiocy? You didn't look like an officer, so you're failed. But I only had 2 years of college, so I had to wait a couple of years before I was called for my pilot training. And I enlisted as a flying cadet in 1939, and I took off from there.
Do you remember a big thrill the first time you got up in the air? Is that something that's still fresh in your mind after all the flight hours you have since then?
Well, actually not, because I had been in the model business and flying model aircraft, and I knew most of the aerodynamics and most of the background, and I had a couple of flights before that with civilian aircraft, so I was not too much impressed with the situation initially. As you know, I have sort of a problem attitude towards situations. Actually, the big surprise I got when I got to primary was I saw all these airplanes snaking down the taxiway. And I thought, my God, I can taxi straighter than that. What's going on around here? Well, as a student, you're in the back seat and you're blind, so you have to snake along so you won't run into the guy in front of you. So I really wasn't so smart after all.
One of the questions I ask every veteran that I interview, regardless of what branch of service, regardless of what his duties were in the war, I ask them all about December 7th, 1941. I know you have a very interesting story about that, but I want to hear a little bit before that. What were you doing in the buildup to that day, and how were you where you were?
I'll tell you who you are. You're a second lieutenant, and you're stationed at Salt Lake City at Fort Douglas, which they ran the Indians out of. So you can imagine what status was when we were in Salt Lake City. This is, you're married about 8 or 9 months, and nothing yet. About December the 1st, my boss called me in and said, Thacker, I want you to go up to Seattle and pick up a 4-engine B-17 Flying Fortress. And I said, Captain, I've never even sat in the left seat of a B-17. And he said, Thacker, don't you understand orders in English? Go up and pick up a B-17 and fly it back to your base here. And here is your navigator. And I said to the navigator, what are you doing in a flying cadet uniform? And they said, they jerked me right out of navigation school, and I'm your navigator. So we went up to Seattle, we picked up a B-17, and we flew back to Salt Lake City. And this was the 4th of December, and we took off from Salt Lake, 6 of us, to shake the airplanes down and to get accustomed to our navigators. And this, we were a ferry crew, really. We had no guns. We were actually on secret orders, but we wanted to find out what the cruise control was, because the B-17E was a little changed from the other B-17s. So we took off Friday night, and we got snowed out of Salt Lake, and we landed at Tucson. Saturday morning, we got a call from General Marshall, the number one Army man. He said, get out of bed. We were downtown hotel out of Tucson. We landed at the commercial airport because there wasn't any Tucson in those days. Nevertheless, he said, get out of bed, get your airplane ready to go, and go to Hamilton Field, which is 20 miles north of San Francisco. And stop by Sacramento and pick up anything you want, and but we'll see you in Hamilton Field. So I picked up. We never went back home. We left cars, women, laundry. So I called Betty Jo in Salt Lake, and I said, honey, if you want to see me, I think you better drive over to Hamilton. So she and a friend drive over Donner Pass in snow, you know how high, and when she got to Hamilton, they wouldn't let her on the field, and she started to cry and wanted to see this officer of the day, and they finally let her on. So Saturday night, December 6th, we had dinner at the officer's mess, and the gentleman sitting right next to us at the table was General Arnold, our number one Air Force man. What was he doing at Hamilton Field? He was making damn sure that these airplanes took off that night for Honolulu. So I said, honey, if you want to know who's who around here, I'll be flashing my landing lights as I taxi out. Took off about 10 o'clock Friday, Saturday night, beautiful evening. Second navigational ride with my navigator in a flying cadet uniform.
So the navigator didn't have a ton of experience. Neither did Robert Thacker in the cockpit. But that was all about to change as night turned into day in the Pacific Ocean. We need to catch our first break, but when we come back, we'll hear what he found himself flying into on December 7th, 1941. Go to hometownheroesradio.com for more on Colonel Robert Thacker, who turns 100 years old this coming Wednesday. And we'll be right back after this.